July Tynwald still has a few treasures to squeeze out, including an impassioned speech from Sarah Maltby in which she called on Tynwald members to stop just singing about our green hills by the sea and actually do something to protect and maintain the public rights of way that allow us access to some of the most beautiful countryside in these islands. We'll catch up later on some of the questions and answers that began the mammoth four-day sitting, but first, highlights from Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby's speech.
Mr Butchery was calling for one agency to be formed to pool the resources and funding into one place to make the delivery of a maintenance programme for the public right-of-way network a more efficient operation. The wording of his petition I will share with you now. The public footpaths, bridleways and greenlands on the island are an important and well-used asset, contributing to the health, fitness and general well-being of the population. They are also, along with the TT and the Heritage Railways, a primary driver of tourism, and as such, bring in much-needed external revenue. Many sections of the network of public rights-of-way are poorly maintained, badly signposted and in many places dangerous and impassable. Currently, the network falls under the administration of DRI, DEFRA, Manx Utilities and some local authorities. These agencies have differing priorities and agendas, resulting in inconsistent levels of maintenance of the public rights of way. I was thankful that my motion was unanimously supported and the select committee was formed comprising of the Honourable Member for Garth, Mrs. Kane, and our former Tynwald Council colleague, Mr. Henderson. We produced a very comprehensive report which spanned two volumes due to the number of stakeholders who shared with the committee evidence of failings with the current funding and resourcing arrangement. When we often consider what makes for a comprehensive consultation, I think we can all agree that the response to the call for evidence we received just shows the level of importance the communities on the Isle of Man place on our wonderful natural asset, and how disappointed they are seeing their once favourite walks deteriorate so drastically and possibly causing irreversible damage. These comments are absolutely no reflection on the hard-working workforce within the DOI and DEFA, who have been trying to grapple with the ever-increasing backlog in the face of the ever-increasing public scrutiny and dwindling inadequate budget. The Select Committee produced the report with the following recommendations, unanimously supported and not amended. Can you believe that? A rare and beautiful moment. The report consisted of three recommendations. Recommendation one was that the Tynwald is the opinion that there should be adequate investment in maintaining the public rights of way, network and government-owned public paths. Recommendation two was that the Department of Infrastructure lay before Tynwald by April 2023 a report detailing how it intends to address the backlog of changes that need to be made to the definitive maps and statements. Recommendation number three was that the Council of Ministers should establish a working party to develop a viable and fully costed strategy for proactively maintaining and developing the island's public rights of way and government-owned public paths, and that would be working in conjunction with the Department of Infrastructure, DEFA, DFE, local authorities, the Countryside Access Group and other stakeholders, and seek Tynwald's approval for the strategy by July 2023. Well, 2 years later, we are finally here with a costed report prepared by the working group, whom I am very grateful for their perseverance. Honourable members, the report from the working group makes it very clear that the years of reductions to the maintenance budget is the single point of failure. The members of the working group were selected as officers with responsibility for land or policies involving footpaths and public rights of way. Each person on the working group is fully aware of the cost pressures faced on government, not just in recent times, but going way back many years. And so their recommendations on page 2 of the report within the executive summary were not arrived at lightly, I'm sure. It is recommended that the revenue budget be increased to £831,301 and a £700,000 minor capital budget be allocated annually to the maintenance of the public rights of way. This level of investment will allow for the improved standards of maintenance and eliminate the backlog. When the backlog is eliminated, after 5 years, the minor capital requirements will reduce by £300,000. So although I am glad to see a recent argument for increased maintenance funding within the working group report, the provision of such funding by Tynwald is still far from guaranteed. In summary, Ecterenn, on Tynwald Day, only 1 week ago, mostly all, sang in fine voice to the songs Ellen Vannon and Isle of Mona, which celebrates our beloved Ireland and its purple mountains and glens, which are alive with beauty and vibrancy. However, Ecterenn, I'm incredibly frustrated, along with many other people, that while we can all share warm words about our island, too many are neglecting their responsibility as custodians of our gem in the middle of the Irish Sea. We need more people to advocate for its maintenance and champion what we have here, because if we don't, we'll only realise what we had when it's gone. Investing in the Isle of Man's public rights of way is an investment in our heritage, health and economy. These ancient paths are more than just trails. They are living links to our island's history, offering residents and visitors alike access to breathtaking landscapes, cultural landmarks and local wildlife. Maintaining them ensures safe, sustainable access for walkers, cyclists and riders, promoting physical and mental well-being across all ages. Well-kept rights-of-way support our tourism sector, drawing outdoor enthusiasts and heritage tourists whose spending boosts local businesses and may even lead to relocation opportunities. Neglecting these paths risks not only public safety, but also the erosion of our unique asset that sets the Isle of Man apart. By funding their upkeep, we protect our environment and strengthen community ties. Our island may be small, but our island's natural beauty has no equal. And I think we all have a responsibility for ensuring that future generations can enjoy the freedom to explore the island's rich and varied beauty. Ecterenn, the time for singing about our green hills by the sea is over. We need meaningful investment.
So has Sarah Maltby moved things forward?
A step closer today and a commitment from Treasury to consider within the next budget round something that's affordable but also is actually going to begin to tackle this backlog of public rights-of-way maintenance, scheduled work that is very clearly needed and has now been identified within the working group report, which does comprise of officers who are working within the departments who really have a real grasp of what the issue is and have put it down in black and white for all to see, costed, and now Treasury have got a commitment to bring something back in the budget in February to see how they're going to tackle it. It is comprehensive, you know, there's a lot to do, but what we're talking about here is our national asset. You know, it's something that we should be so incredibly proud of, and as I said today, we won't know what we've got until we lose it, and then it's too late then, we can't do much about it. So we really do need to invest in what we have, maintain it. But I do recognise that over the years the DOI have faced, you know, really poor budgets, so they haven't been able to do what they've wanted to do. This is by no reflection of the work teams and the officers involved here. This is a case of consequence of not having the foresight to continue to invest in what we have on the Isle of Man, which is an absolutely fantastic asset. But yeah, it can easily be lost. And as we've seen with the deterioration around the island, it proves very costly to fix retrospectively. We often sing the praises of the Isle of Man and how beautiful it is, but actually we need to stop the singing now and the talking, and we need to get on with the action. And unfortunately that does mean spending money on something that really shouldn't have got into the state that it has. You know, I'm really keen to make sure that what we do here is get a realistic outcome. I'm not expecting the budget to come forward with an absolutely a full plan of how they're going to tackle this. I'm wanting to say some progress, moving towards what we actually know is required. But yeah, I do feel very passionate about the Isle of Man and what we have. You know, we have to champion it. We can't just rely on other people to do it. We all have to be advocates for this. And if we can all do something to help maintain the footpaths, I mean, we have volunteers, we have community groups, we have local authorities, so many different stakeholders that all try their best, but without that funding, that clear commitment from the government, then really we want to hide into nothing. We all need to chip in to make sure this happens, and my role within Tynwald is to be able to bring motions and bring it to the forefront of everyone's minds. And unfortunately, sometimes I feel frustrated that you have to do that. You know, you would have thought that this would just happen, but it isn't, because government have so many different challenges. I would actually just like to place on record as well, during my speech, I did say that the DOI have neglected their responsibilities. And actually, on reflection, that's probably a little bit unfair. I think actually they can only do what they've got the budget to do, and they are in an unenviable position of trying to find funds for something that they actually believe is the right thing to do as well. And the working group report does identify exactly where the funding is required and what schemes need to be boosted in order to be able to deliver on the outcomes that we require within that report. I think it's important to also say that this is now the second time that Tynwald has reaffirmed that it is committed to doing something here. The will of Tynwald is clearly there, and we had a unanimous vote again recorded. So this isn't just something that I've kind of cropped up and thought this would be a really good thing to say. We have a huge amount of people who are passionate about the island and want to see it looking its best, and we have now reaffirmed again that Tynwald is of the same opinion, and I hope that that means in February we will have a more sustainable going forward picture of about how this actually can be rectified. We'll also as well within the amendment have a consultation launched about the definitive maps and the statements. I know when I did the call for evidence for the select committee, that was something that was really important to people. You know, that feels like something that not many people would know about, but actually it's so important that we have the definitive map up to date and accurate. And actually that's something that we definitely need to make sure was focused on. And that was, I'm pleased that that recommendation within the that amendment within the amendment today was supported.
In terms of political craft, what you were successful in doing was getting your amendment through unopposed. How do you go about doing that? And could other backbenchers learn something from the way you did it?
I'm very much of the opinion that this isn't about grandstanding or about being the person that's kind of changed the world. It's about actually working with people to a common goal, to reach what actually is a successful outcome. I had lots of meetings with the Treasury, with the DOI, with the DfE, with lots of different ministers to try to find a resolution, something that was going to work, that officers were able to formulate and actually be able to work within their resourcing as well. It was something that I think is important to do. Talking is all well and good on the Tynwald floor, but actually the talking behind the scenes and actually getting those that common consensus, I think, is far more of a better way to do things. And that's the way I've done it throughout the whole of the 4 years. And I really believe that that is the most successful way to achieve the outcome that we all want.
That was Douglas South MHK Sarah Maltby. Next, Onchan MHK Julie Edge had several questions on the order paper. You topped the charts in terms of questions that you wished to ask. You didn't actually get round to asking all the questions. I think we got as far as question 16 was answered. So 16 out of the 28 questions were answered. You weren't entirely happy that questions weren't continued at some point after the allotted 2.5 hours.
No, and I think it's wrong. You know, democratically, we ask questions on behalf of our constituents or people that come forward to us. And it's become very clear now that there was a plan already in place, it seems, and because there was lots of long answers from ministers. Yet, you know, occasionally, I get pulled up more than most, it seems, because they don't. I feel that we're getting to the point that they don't want the difficult questions that I'm prepared to ask, and I'll continue to do it.
But standing orders does say you've got 2.5 hours allotted for questions. Presumably then, if you're wanting all the questions to be answered, you need to change standing orders.
Yes, maybe that's something that we could propose to the Standing Orders Committee to see for the future, so that we, you know, the democratically all questions can be answered.
So let's get to the questions. I mean, you got a number of your questions were answered. The first one was a starred question, what process there is for checking employer compliance with work permit legislation. What was your concern there?
So a concern was raised with me by an employer on the island who does all their due diligence, you know, does the processes correctly, that they've they never have a check from the DfE to ensure that the person's still employed there, still operating under that work permit. So that was the concern. And then, of course, we had the news last week of somebody working on the island that was wanted. Subsequently, thank you to our police for ensuring that person was arrested and removed back to the UK. I think it was the Westminster courts. But I am concerned, as many of the public come into me, are really concerned how these people will hear, who's checking their work permits, who's checking they're valid in the roles that they're in. And when you look at, you know, there's been a lot of concern raised with regards to exploitation in visas. Well, could there be exploitation in work permits also? Because if they're not getting checked that the individual's still working, a work permit is for the place that you're working in. If nobody's doing that check and due diligence, it's so open to possibly to abuse. Minister said they do 200 planned checks, but out of how many work permits that are currently circulating, he didn't have that answer. And I think that's a real significant question that needs answered to make sure, you know, if they're only doing 200 and we've got 2,000 out there, it's a small minority, and there could be, you know, issues that are going to come to light that could damage our reputation on the island, and I'm not prepared to allow that to happen.
I suppose, though, the minister could, well, I may be putting words into his mouth here, but you assume that the system's working well, unless you hear lots and lots of complaints about it not working well. I guess if the department hasn't received lots and lots of complaints about the system not working well, that's the reason why it's not doing as many checks as it would if there were a deep concern that the system was being abused.
You know, as locals and been here all of our lives, we've always been very conscious of the work permit system, why it's there, and obviously to ensure that people on the island are protected in employment. Clearly what's happening now, and certainly there's been relaxations and that on, and in the hospitality area, and it was a concern of mine at the time when that was brought in. Who's checking? We did have concerns about speeding the process up. I've spoken to work permits in the process, very quick, very clean. And I believe it was always like that, but it was always an excuse. Well, it delays, we need these exemptions because it's a slow process. What my main concern is that everybody that's arriving on the island is bona fide to be in the workplace, because I'm aware of a lot of our own young people that are going for jobs, don't even get an answer and don't get a job. But there's possibly, you know, work permits or visas being handed out because of all these routes of opportunity to come in.
And, of course, the next of your questions was question 8 to the Treasury Minister, what the process is for revoking a visa if an individual is found guilty of an offence. Did the Minister give you convincing answers?
Well, he answered, and I think I did get a little bit concerned that he can actually sign these off for individuals. But it was immigration officers seem to be making the decisions, and then it goes up through a hierarchy. My concern is we've lost so much of the corporate knowledge in Isle of Man government. Are we confident that the protections are there for the Manx residents that are already here to ensure that there's no escalation of criminal activity on the island due to just a failed process? And I think that's key.
Well, certainly surprising to me that the Treasury Minister has any role to play in in the visa process? I mean, you would have thought that would have been the Cabinet Office or somewhere like that. Why is Treasury involved?
Yeah, I was a bit shocked at that, because obviously when I put the question in, I didn't put it into Treasury and I was advised. And obviously it was a change when we moved customs officers, border security, and setting that up is a change that's happened. However, when you've got a Treasury Minister that's always saying we need to bring more people here to ensure that we can continue to afford everything that we need, is then the custodian of being able to sign them off. That really, to me, is a pure conflict. The Treasury Minister didn't think it was a conflict. I do. I just think that there's not enough cross-checking across the whole of government that, you know, they seem to want to isolate work permits out from visas, but if you're here on a visa, you might need a work permit as well. And I'm really concerned that the corporate knowledge has gone out of Isle of Man government. The previous Chief Minister, Alan Bell, was talking about this on your show, and I've always said it, we've lost that excellent corporate knowledge and experience, and I'm concerned that we've got loopholes, or we've just got lack of experience allowing the situation to not be good for the people and residents on the island. We want to know where we're secure. We need to get them borders secure sooner rather than later, and have a way of checking and processing people when they come into the island. It's in place in other places. Why not the Isle of Man?
And I guess government would say that there are processes in place and that they are robust. But obviously you have your opinions and they have theirs. Other questions then. When the last student wellbeing surveys took place, there was quite a lot of questioning surrounding that issue. It's certainly an issue that seems to be a big problem in regard to students and their well-being at the moment. Again, the minister gave some fulsome answers. Were you convinced by those answers?
No, the report was clear of what actions needed to be done, and a lot of it was around data analysis to ensure that there was progress for students. If we haven't got the well-being of our students at our heart, at the centre of education, and, you know, looking at this report, I don't think they've enacted a lot of the recommendations, but I'm also concerned of, are they abrogating their responsibilities to outside suppliers to pick up pieces, but there's no data being collected in an overall capacity, because, you know, the minister stood up straight away and said, well, there's our lesson have got a contract with Manx Care. That tells me that the data will be going to Manx Care on certain elements of this mental health and wellbeing. What the Isle of Man hasn't got quite right at the present time, and we did have it years ago when I worked in the system, you get data for anything. You know, we had excellent economic data, and, you know, wellbeing surveys and the health of our young people in education is statistics that are required to make sure the structure and the environment in education going forward and the curriculum is appropriate, and that's rapidly changing, and I don't feel any solid statistics are coming out of any of many areas of government.
You also had a question, unusually, bearing in mind it's not in your constituency, about the progress with the capital project to build a new Castle Rushen High School. Why were you interested in that question?
I was interested because many people reported back from the road shows, and particularly the Castle Rushen one, and the minister announcing, the education minister announcing at the Castle Rushen road show that she had some great news to announce, and that the project had moved far further forward in the last 12 months than it had in the previous 5 years. Absolute nonsense when you look at the timeline that was published to all Tynwald members, so they should all check. They don't seem to be checking back what's previously been published, and it's way out of time. It seems to me it might get railroaded at the very last minute to get a spade in the ground in 2026. Totally wrong. Capital procedures are there for a reason, and to not even have a design team in place, and I think she said August, when it was supposed to be sort of January this year, that tells you there's already a delay, and to stand up, I think, is disingenuous to the people of the island to say that it's moved far further forward when it hasn't.
The minister did refer to several architects having attended now to have a look at the site, so presumably the minister is convinced that things are moving.
Well, I'm not sure how that was procured. She said it's been procured. I think, again, what really concerned me was the distancing herself from the actual project. And it's really important in an education setter that the PMU don't work in education. The education department and our teachers, etc., do. And I think the recognition that they are the client and they need to ensure that that school is built for the future generations on the island is really important. Education's rapidly changing from the traditional school structure to you know, there's going to be blended learning, there's going to be online, there's going to be students learning in a totally different way, and we need to grasp that with this development.
You had then two questions for the Enterprise Minister, one in relation to due diligence undertaken on company address and registration, another in relation to the role and responsibility of the business representative in South Africa. What was the thinking behind those questions?
Well, as you know, there's a lot of talk about what activities going on in South Africa, and it's value for money, really, and to make sure that we are getting a return on that investment. It sounded quite low at 20,000. However, what's getting spent on travel, entertainment, coming to London, coming to the Isle of Man, you know, it's never just the figure that the person gets for that individual role. It is important. You know, we have always had strong links with South Africa, and we've had a lot of businesses, you know, got a lot of businesses headed up by people from South Africa. But I want to know what the net jobs are, because if it was so important to have an individual there, were they purely there to try and get high net worths into the island, or are they there to actually bring some economic benefit to people and employment? I didn't really get any answers, did I? but that was my concern around that. And, you know, we can't just keep creating these roles and not seeing anything in return.
And the due diligence question about companies.
So the due diligence about the companies, there's a lot of people, and you know, you'll spot it sometimes on the media, saying that there's a company letter arrived at their house, or you know, I walk into some buildings and I look and there's all sorts of companies registered in places in Onken and Douglas, and I think, well, who's actually checking that these people are still valid and are at that address? To you know, what contribution to the Isle of Man are these companies that seem to have mail lying around in lobbies and in post boxes in the Isle of Man? What's the contribution? What is it about? And you know, the minister didn't really have any answers on that neither, you know, unless things were to be turned to registry. So what I would have liked to ask, if I'd have been given the opportunity, was will he do some external media on that to say anybody that receives letters to a company at their address, return it to registry, because they're probably sending it to the post office, and then where does it go? Mm. So it's quite easy to fix, really.
And then we get to the questions that you had two for the Department of Health and Social Care. You had one to the Lottery Trust, one to Desk, and then another one to DHSC. Obviously, we won't get to those questions. So what actually happens now in relation to those?
So they'll just be converted to written. So you've not got the opportunity to do any oral challenge for those questions or the answers that you receive. You don't have to accept the written answer. You can then, obviously, we've also got the opportunity through August, September to put in written questions as follow-ups. But it just delays questions. You know, one of the really important ones for me was, I know there's a large number of student nurses qualified. Are they getting substantial posts with full-time FTE at the right grade? And I'll be getting that written now. But hopefully, you know, I'll have to publish these myself for the answers for the people. It's the public that ask us to ask these questions. They're their concerns that they're raising. Yes, some of the supplementaries will be coming from ourselves, from our knowledge in here. But most questions are raised by the public and they want them asked. With regards to what else is on the order paper, is the public more interested in that than questions? I think the public want their questions answered.
And presumably you could hold these questions over until the next sitting, could you?
Well, we weren't given any opportunity, were we? So, you know, at that point in time, because it was just... I'm shocked on the last sitting of this session that there was so many people. Actually, there wasn't. It was the Council of Ministers plus, I think it was the Speaker, Mr. Peters. There must have been one other, because the Council of Ministers is 10 now, so it's very difficult for us to win anything. So,
but not all the ministers voted.
Not all of them, no. So there were some backbenchers that went against as well. I'm sorry, I'm in here to get the answers and all the work that my constituents want me to do. I'm in here for that, and that's what the public are expecting, and I think we should have continued.
That was Julie Edge. Next, Arbury Castletown and Malou MHK, Tim Glover.
You had a couple of questions down in Tynwald. You didn't get to the second of them, but we could talk about that. Let's start with that one. What was that about?
This is about the charges relating to fallen livestock on farms, and what legislation, the charges that have gone up significantly. What legislation is that under?
And indeed, those charges, if I recall correctly, we were talking about something like 150%, possibly even bigger than that, increases.
Yeah, and under what legislation are those charges being put up? I've been talking to the Manx Farmers, National Farmers Union, and they're concerned that there isn't legislation that is covered by this, because the fee collecting component of that doesn't relate to animal or agricultural waste. It relates to I'm trying to find it now, domestic, commercial and industrial waste. Fallen livestock, they don't have charge imposed on them, the farmers, by local authorities or by contractors. It is done by infrastructure, and very expertly done as well, I'm told. But how are they raising these charges? Under what legislation? That's a fundamental flaw.
And I seem to remember when this was first raised, I think it was about a year ago now, that there was concern that the charges would amount to significantly more than the actual cost of running the plant.
Indeed. So there's a lot of concerns. So I'm going to see. We've actually, funnily enough, got a report from the Standing Orders Committee of Tynwald, which does relate to questions that have not been addressed. So I'm not quite sure what the standing orders will be by the end of this, Tynwald, in relation to how that will be answered. The standard way, of course, is that I will get a written answer. But the disappointing aspect is that there's no supplementaries to follow. And that's why it was down as an oral question. That's why I did move. I know it's a very long order paper, but it's what we're here for. Did move that we return to the question paper at the end and completion of the main order paper, but that didn't get voted through. People are obviously keen to have their summer recess.
You also had a question in relation to the debacle surrounding the chair of Visit Isle of Man.
It was, but also it's about it focused on that as it went, but it's also about the debacle we've had in relation to matters that are now relating to companies under criminal investigation and a worldwide criminal investigation. So I wanted to focus in on what due process, due diligence takes place ahead of trying to attract a company to the Isle of Man, that it's a legit company. But yes, it did seem to focus on the issues around Visit Isle of Man. I was somewhat perplexed by the minister's answer there, that everything had been followed, but there is an investigation. Well, if everything was followed, there'd be no need for an investigation. So you can't have one without the other. That's where my confusion is, especially when a quick Google search would have alerted you to a few red flags.
And I guess the situation with the department is that you can't be everywhere checking everything, can you?
No, but these are important appointments to, you know, the head of one of the agencies that the department is running. I mean, that is an important one to get right.
And then finally, you had a fairly sharp message for the health minister in relation to the debate which surrounded the 15 million overspend. In fact, you got quite forceful and loud in your language.
Well, and you would ask this while the health minister's sitting here right next to me now, but it wasn't directed at the current health minister, I must say. I think is getting stuck in and trying to sort things out, but it's the continuing process that we've had over many, many years now, where health, or the department as it was before then, Manx Care, or the department, it all comes under the Department of Health and Social Security, have overspent, and overspent by many millions of pounds. And I think that Mr. Speaker hit the nail on the head. We as Tynwald have either to decide whether it is that health is underfunded or is overspending. And I think the health minister, to her credit, was very honest in summing up, saying that she felt it was probably around 50-50, and the answer lay pretty much in the middle there. That had to come a point where Tynwald members have to stand up and say, we're not just going to nod this through, and I think quite a few did. It got through. It doesn't really matter voting against anyway, because the money was going to be found anyway. It was a pretty irrelevant vote. But I think it was time to make the point. Enough is enough.
But presumably, if the 15 million hadn't been voted through, then that would be 15 million less that the department would have to spend this year.
I'm sure Treasury would have conjured up some plan.
Well, you say that, but they wouldn't come to Tynwald for the supplementary vote if they felt that it wasn't necessary.
No, and I think it just focuses minds. That's all I think yesterday was about. They were never going to lose the vote on the supplementary, but I think it was really important that some backbenchers stood up and said, look, this isn't good enough anymore. Things have to change. And that was the message.
Tim Glover there. Finally, Enterprise Minister Tim Johnston.
So, Minister, you had lots of questions to answer in Tynwald. It's not often that the Enterprise Minister gets as many questions as that. Have you been upsetting the members?
Well, I don't know. I think they're just saving a few up. It's the last one of the season as such. So I do have questions. I've had two or three, you know, in a row in the past. It's just the way it works out, really. What's bothering people?
And one of the things, well, I mean, there were several things that we could talk about, but one of the things that was bothering people was the issue surrounding due diligence, particularly, well, there were a couple of due diligence related questions. One was, I guess, in relation to the outgoing chair of the visit agency. And on the one hand, you said that due process had been followed and it seemed like a reasonable process, but there was an internal investigation being undertaken in relation to the matter, which obviously then prompted Laurie Hooper to ask, well, if there's nothing actually wrong with the way that the process was followed, why do you need an internal investigation?
Well, I think people putting two and two together and getting 48, as often happens in there, I'm afraid. I mean, ultimately, clearly there's an issue because somebody's gone. The reason they've gone is that there's an issue. What I can't do is start talking in great detail about what that issue is. All I can say and did say is that there's been a matter that's been referred through due to concerns about financial regulations. That is a situation. Automatically, when the situation like this happens, members do tend to start questioning straight away, well, hang on, who's done something wrong? You know, who's failed here? And that's not the case. The individual has gone through a process when it came to recruitment. So my point was that, of course, in any situation like this, when something unfortunate has happened, you always need to look back on it and say, well, hang on, what has happened? How did it happen? Has there been issues? But as far as the actual process is concerned for recruiting an individual, it's gone through standard processes.
So there is this internal investigation that you mentioned. I mean, is that the sort of thing that we'll ever get to find out about, or is that a very definitely internal matter?
Well, I can't answer that at this stage. I think, as I say, I don't know. Clearly, if there's anything there that absolutely needs to be in the public, for the public interest, then of course it will be. But clearly, these are sensitive matters when you're talking about an individual, you're talking about a contract with an individual, you know, that we have to be very careful what we can and can't say. I think it's always unfortunate situations like this. For a minister, you're always very exposed because it's very easy to ask questions and make it sound like, you know, make a bit of sort of hay while the sun shines, if you like, in a situation like this. But I have to be very careful what I say.
And the another of the due diligence questions was in relation to companies and addresses given. You sounded convinced that the correct processes are in place, but I guess the person asking the question wouldn't have asked the question if they didn't have some concerns.
Well, all I could do, I think, in that to respond to that was to sort of allay any concerns and the fact there are proper structures in place. Clearly, through our registry, which is obviously within the Department for Enterprise, they have very strict protocols around how businesses register on the island. That has to be followed, and of course, if a business is a TTSP, then there are separate processes through the regulator because they're regulated very heavily by the FSA. So those regulations and those rules themselves dictate that. That's the only separation. I think there was a sort of a question, well, you know, do some fall between the cracks between the two? And I was making it very clear, well, no, because there's a very clear mandate for those businesses that have their own regulator against those that are assessed through the central registry through proper process.
Another concern was expressed in relation to work permits and whether actually there was any sort of checks being undertaken or sufficient checks being undertaken by your department to make sure that people who had work permits were still working for the place that they got their work permits to work for. The questioner, Ms. Edge, wasn't satisfied with the answer, but I guess you wouldn't have given the answer if you weren't satisfied.
Well, I wasn't necessarily satisfied with the question, to be fair, Phil. I mean, I think it was conflating again a few issues. It's very easy to sort of talk around work permits and people coming to the island, and then people start talking about immigration, and it all gets a bit conflated. And you know, we need to be quite clear what we're talking about, and the clear structures are in place. Someone coming to the Isle of Man from the Common Travel Area, so that's from the UK or Ireland or from the Channel Islands, if they come to work on the Isle of Man, yes, they need to have a work permit. If someone's coming in from elsewhere, then they need to go through the immigration process and have a confirmation of employment from an employer. There's strict processes. As far as the work permit system is concerned, you know, we do have officers. Their full-time role is to go around checking businesses, making sure that things are being done properly and assessing situations. And if clearly there's a breach, then that is addressed. Often those breaches are very minor and not intentional, and they can be sorted out very quickly. Sometimes it's more serious, in which case it's referred to the Attorney General's office for potential prosecution. But ultimately, in the common travel area, people can come to the Isle of Man, and you know, someone can move here tomorrow and buy a house and live here. They wouldn't be able to claim benefits or anything like that, but they could come and live here. And if they want to work, they need to have a work permit. If they start working without it and they're found out, then clearly that's an issue. But you know, the idea that we are somehow have sort of work permit offices at the border, you know, waiting for people to come in, I said the system, it just doesn't work that way.
And I guess it's a question of balance in relation to these matters. You have to assess how significant the issue is and then decide how significant the policing of the issue needs to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, we're always going to be concerned, we all are in society, when we see issues or things arise in the paper that we feel uncomfortable about. Clearly it's important that we're doing our job, and making sure that we are assessing properly. All I can say is there's over 200 assessments made every year across the economy to make sure that the proper processes are in place, proper work permits are in place. And it's absolutely right that we do that and give that reassurance to the public that that is happening. Unfortunately, in the real world, we know that there are people who are always looking to try and exploit situations. What we have to do is find those people out and do something about that. I say most of the time when it comes to these issues, they're very minor issues, actually, that just need more of an educational issue that we can sort out. But sometimes there's clearly a breach and that needs to be addressed.
And then the final question that I'm wanting to raise with you is in relation to the TT. I mean, you will be aware that there are grumbles about the can you call it a new schedule, because it's been operating for a few years now. I guess the weather hasn't really helped in the last 2 years, where we've had so many disruptions to the race programme. Clearly there were quite a few concerns expressed by members. In a position to be able to reflect on those concerns and potentially suggest some changes?
Yes, I think always. I mean, I think, again, I've made it very clear, and I answered a question quite recently in Timwald on this, that, you know, we have that process ongoing at the moment. You know, when we made those changes to the schedule, which came into force 2 years ago, that was following, you know, a very detailed consultation, not just with the public, but with all the stakeholders, and that's what shaped and framed the changes going forward. We're now into year three. Yes, we've had two really challenging years with the weather. So, you know, whatever structure we had in place, that the weather would have affected it. What I have to do is always be able to step back and look at the bigger picture of what we're trying to achieve with the TT, what the challenges are, where we're trying to take it, and the pressures we have in running such a massive event. Because let's be honest, this event wouldn't start today. You know, something that's been going for many, many decades, and it's something we're all incredibly proud of and want to maintain. But we have the responsibility of making it moving forward and with all the challenges, and that sometimes means making changes. We recognise that some people don't always like the change, but it's done with the right intentions, looking at the data. And if you look at the bigger picture of where things are, look at the record numbers that people are coming, looking at the expenditure on the island, looking at the global coverage we're getting, the TT is in a very good place.
And I think you mentioned a figure about the contribution to the Manx economy of the TT.
Well, that's right. I mean, we're looking at a sort of probably a fairly conservative figure of around about £50 million, which is fantastic, and that's been spent in the economy. But people, I think, sometimes forget also, but there's still a net cost to the running the event to the government in my department of several million pounds. So I have the responsibility to ensure that I don't let those costs get out of control. I need to maintain that. That's why the income that comes in from promotion, which is our responsibility, goes to offset those costs. And it's very important that we have a strong business model to make that work.
Final point then. I mean, one of the points that was made was in relation to the Southern 100, which obviously is taken place in the last week or so. Castletown, as a result of the Southern 100, was buzzing. There were lots and lots of people all associated there. Now, I suppose it's easier when it is an event which is very clearly associated with one part of the island. But Douglas members certainly seem to be raising the issue that buzz that used to exist around TT in Douglas is perhaps not there.
Yeah, and I hear that, and a few members talked about that today. But I think also I noticed the response from honourable member Mr. Callister, who made the point that, and quite rightly, that again things have changed over the last 30 or 40 years. I can remember back in the mid 80s when, you know, you'd walk down the promenade and it was stacked with bikes from one end to the other, and everything was happening on the promenade because that's where everybody was, that's where all the boarding houses were, that's where everyone was staying. Now that's changed. People are living and staying all over the island, the homestay with glamping and camping. It's a very different environment now. So what we're seeing is, you know, people that money expenditure has been spread further around the island. It's not so much concentrated in Douglas. I think sometimes see that Douglas is a bit quieter and make an assumption. But actually, if you look at the figures, we see that the numbers that are coming to the island, that they're actually higher. So it's different. It's changed. One thing we have to take on board, and I think it's quite right, that, you know, to listen to local authorities, listen to businesses around the island to say what's worked for them, what hasn't, and if we can help in any way with promotion and other things, then that's what we'll do. It's quite challenging because we see, for example, that I think in the north of the island, I think in Ramsey, there was very strong visitor support around TT. Other areas have said less so. So it's quite right we look at that and listen to that and see what we can do to help.
That was MHK for Air and Michael Tim Johnston. So what do you think? Is the minister's reassuring stance convincing you, or do you think the questioners are right to be concerned? Does the TT schedule need to change, do you think, or does it work for you? And what about Sarah Maltby's stirring speech? Will it make a difference? Do you agree that more money should be spent on our footpaths to make the countryside more accessible, or is the current amount sufficient? Let me know your thoughts on the programme by contacting Phil Gorn at manxradio.com and get in touch if you have any ideas for future shows. Don't forget, this programme is available as a podcast on Manx Radio's website. I'm Phil Gorn. Goramayos and Geisha Krom. Thanks for listening.